You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We're taking over some of the topics on health matters because health does matter on Notepad with me, Ibrahim Sani. Joining me on the line is Dr. Muhammad Imran Abdul Hafiz, a cardiologist at Pantai Hospital Kuala Lumpur. Dr. Imran, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Prior to the show, we were just joking, right? The cardiologist would be the last kind of doctor that we want to see. And if we do have to see one, it is because, you know, a lot of things could go wrong or have gone wrong. And it is because in this light that we want to spread, number one, the awareness of maintaining a good heart and good lifestyle. But number two, try to understand the level of health awareness and health status of cardiology in Malaysia. Maybe you could run through some of the macro numbers about the state of health for Malaysia when it comes to the heart.
Assalamualaikum. Thank you very much, Ibrahim, for inviting me on your show. I'm really pleased and honored to be here. And rightly so, a lot of people who walked into my clinic, I'm kind of like the last doctor that they've been pointed to. In some situations, I'm the first one. But in any kind of encounter, what I really want for my patients is them to be well. Okay, so if they have a heart problem, I'd like to help them out. If they don't have a heart problem yet, I'd like them to avoid it, okay? And I think you already alluded to the fact that cardiovascular or cardiac health in Malaysia is something that's been on the back burner really since the COVID-19 pandemic has struck. But I think rightly so, it's really important to point out that of all 100 death certificates signed in Malaysia, 17% of these deaths will be caused directly by ischemic heart disease, okay, or coronary artery disease. One in five males in Malaysia will die of some kind of heart problem, with females following closely, in one in seven or one in eight of them passing on due to heart disease as well. And I think rightly so, we've pointed out the macro situation in Malaysia with regards to Malaysia being called the sweetest country in Southeast Asia, most obese country in, closely becoming the most obese country in the world. And we have a huge amount of people with chronic conditions or cardiovascular risk factors that they're not really aware of.
You know, Dr. Imran, I very recently, the Health Minister, Yang Berhormat Kari Jamaluddin, along with the DG of Health, went to the WHO conference and made a public statement saying that in order to manage NCD or non-communicable diseases, Malaysia will ban all sale of health tobacco products to anyone born above 2005. This is, of course, a generational shift in terms of how we protect our young moving forward in terms of, you know, ensuring that NCDs do not go out of control. It already is, actually, if you think about it. But more importantly, this is an active measure by the government trying to ensure that, you know, we keep our, you know, those that want to be healthy to remain healthy. With COVID, do you feel that the awareness of people staying healthy and being healthy is there, or it's more of trying to inspire them to do more? I mean, to be frank, a global pandemic should offer enough of an inspiration. But in your line of work, in your experience, the past 2 years, has this inspired people to stay healthy?
I think that's a really, really, really interesting aspect there, because there's two ways of looking at it. I think a lot of people have been trying to stay under the radar with regards to going out and so on. And with this kind of health behavior, where they more or less stay put, we've seen a lot of patients actually present quite late in the stages of conditions. For example, we've seen a lot of patients coming quite late for cancer follow-ups. A lot of patients have fallen out of their diabetes follow-up, hypertension, and so on. So you can see that a lot of patients who would have been picked up earlier have now actually had delayed diagnosis and delayed treatment started because of COVID, because of they're more afraid of coming to see, to come to hospitals, less of them come to see GPs, A lot of them would really, but I think, so there's two aspects. One would be a lot of patients would be more aware with regards to respiratory illnesses, because they would be more aware, could this be COVID and so on. There's another aspect as well, where, like I mentioned, a lot of them would present quite late for chronic conditions such as hypertension, diabetes, high cholesterol. And, you know, in Malaysia, with maybe about a fifth of adult Malaysians having diabetes, and 50% of these patients having diabetes don't even know they have diabetes. So you can see that they present quite late.
You know, I want to pause right there, Dr. Imran, because that's another element of Malaysians. Generally speaking, I have an obese friend who has been obese for all his life. I do realize that his intake is a bit strange of late, and I asked him to check, but he didn't want to check, right? And this went on for about 1 year, and then of course something bad happened, and upon forced examination, he was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, something that he could have been easily diagnosed, I don't know, a few years earlier. But this is a typical story, right? We've heard of this story so many times. Could you explain?
Definitely. And Ibrahim, you know what's interesting? What's interesting, when I get a new patient and I'm asking them that they've had, I've just been explaining, they've had a new diagnosis of diabetes. Did they know about this? Have they had any previous blood checks done? And you know, a lot of them have had medical checkups done pre-MCO or pre-COVID era, which did not show any issue with diabetes at all. A lot of them had normal cholesterol levels. And 2 years down the line, they've managed to develop or get diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, which is a disease of a lifestyle disease. So you can see the damage that sometimes being working from home, easy access to food delivery applications and so on, you see. So a lot of them have put on a lot of weight, uncontrolled eating, lack of exercise due to the MCO and working from home. A lot of them have developed conditions that they would probably have never had developed in the first place.
You know, we have to go for a short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with cardiologist Dr. Imran of Pantai Hospital Kuala Lumpur. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Dr. Imran Hafiz, a cardiologist at Pantai Hospital Kuala Lumpur. Dr. Imran, I want to go further and talk to you about some micro issues when it comes to cardiology. And of course, being a cardiologist yourself, there's a lot of elements on how to keep fit, how to stay healthy. You know, I hate to ask a person like you that is, of course, a bit too overqualified, right? But perhaps the best person to ask is someone like you. What would be some of the risk factors when it comes to men contracting heart diseases? What would be some of the early indicators that we need to look out for? And most importantly, preventative activities. And those that are watching us right now, hopefully they could be inspired enough to get off their bum and stay healthy. So what would be some of the ideas that you can share with us today?
I think one important measure, Ibrahim, to detect is to find out whether or not you have the classic risk factors for cardiovascular disease. The major risk factors include tobacco smoking, which is a huge factor in developing heart disease. Then you have hypertension, high cholesterol levels, and type 2 diabetes. And as I mentioned earlier, maybe about two in five people in Malaysia have high blood pressure. And sadly, more than half of them don't realize they have high blood pressure until it's a bit too late when they come in with a heart attack or with a stroke or kidney disease. And similarly for diabetes, where 1 in 10 adults, 1 in 5 adults may have diabetes, with half of that not actually realizing they have diabetes. And diabetes, as you know, is a huge risk factor. Unfortunately, we have about a fifth of adults with all three risk factors of cholesterol, hypertension, and diabetes, with maybe about 1 in 5 having two of those major risk factors. In terms of exercise, as a cardiologist, I try to what you call walk the talk, and I try to do regular exercise. And all the major cardiovascular society guidelines, the American, Malaysian ones, the European ones, all advocate at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise per week. Now, I'm not asking you to do 150 minutes per session, but 150 minutes per week, I believe, is relatively accessible, which is 30 minutes a day of maybe walking or brisk walking a few times a week, maybe about 5 times a week. You can do it at any time of your convenience, all right? Maybe take the stairs. So sedentary lifestyles contribute to obesity, increase abdominal weight, abdominal circumference. So just becoming more active, increasing your fruit and vegetable intake. Those are the kind of simple steps you can take really to avoid these cardiovascular problems.
Okay, what about those that really want to ramp things up, that really want to see things differently in 2022? It's still earlier in the year, and of course, people still think that, you know, we've only entered 2022, but actually we've covered 10% of the year. That's the scary bit. But those that really want to be active, those that really want to lose weight, those that really do want to take care of their heart, particularly men, folks like us, do you feel that there are some ideas that you can share with us in terms of challenging ourselves to make sure that we continue to not just stay healthy, but stay as fit as possible to our best capacity?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I always tell patients, just to keep your expectations very to a realistic level, I think a lot of New Year resolutions really phase out by February or March because of the unrealistic unrealistic expectations that they have. For example, everybody wants to do a 10-kilometer jog every weekend. Those kind of things are very, very difficult to do. So what I advise, Ibrahim, and this one I also remind myself, is to keep things in bite-sized chunks, because it's better to perhaps walk half an hour, 2 or 3 times a week, rather than try to jog 1 hour every month. I always ask them to try and cut sugar out. In fact, myself, my New Year resolution is to cut out all simple sugars. So I've tried to cut, I've more or less cut down on my carbonated drinks, on my sweets and cakes, really. I had a huge withdrawal headache when I first started. But I managed to lose 3 kilograms since the start of the year, maintaining my routine exercise, but really just by the simple act of cutting out sugar, really. So I say have realistic expectations and just do your exercise and diets in moderation, in bite size. Don't go too extreme. It won't be sustained. And that's from experience, actually.
All right. Talking about sustainability, you've shared some ideas just now. But let's talk about exercise per se. Some cardiologists do recommend maintaining at a heart rate that is twice the normal heart rate. Am I correct? For 30 minutes during active activities?
I think it's different how you would look at it. Now, we've seen that recently we've had some news about people collapsing during exercise, during cycling, badminton, futsal, and so on. I've had a couple of patients with heart attacks after futsal and actually after basketball as well. And these are kind of burst exercises where you have rapid acceleration, rapid deceleration as well. I always tell people that you have to listen to your body. You don't really go for a particular heart rate target and so on. And you just know that your maximum heart rate is 220 minus your age. So if you're somebody who's 40 years old and 220 minus your age is 180, you shouldn't reach 180 on a regular basis, and you definitely shouldn't sustain a heart rate 10% within 10% of that for prolonged periods of time. So if you're going on twice the normal heart rate, it depends what your normal heart rate is. If your normal heart rate is 50 at rest, then going at 100 is quite a light exercise. If your heart rate at rest is 90, going at twice of that 180 is definitely dangerous. So I'd probably say exercise within limits. If you're able to hold the conversation during exercise, I think that's an absolutely safe level to go to start with.
You know, that's it's timely that you brought that up because we all know Shabir Singh who collapsed and passed away during a cardiovascular activity. Maybe you could share with us the reasons why. I mean, you know, kedai kopi talk is one thing, but honestly, from a cardiology perspective, what happened? You think? I mean, of course, you don't have the medical records, but generally speaking, cases like this, we hear it all the time.
I think this is an interesting and very important aspect because I do a lot of screening for athletes here and people who want to become more active. And they always quote celebrities or personalities who've collapsed during exercise. I'm going to go ahead and say that exercise is will bring far more benefits than dangers. You're more likely to die from a heart attack due to lack of exercise rather than die from a heart attack during exercise. And the people who actually suffer cardiac arrests or pass away during exercise usually will already have an underlying heart issue. And the kind of heart issues that cause problems with during exercise are people with previous heart attacks or previous blocked blood vessels, people with known blockages within the blood vessels called coronary artery disease or ischemic heart disease, people with structurally abnormal hearts. So some people may have this genetic preponderance or inherited condition called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, where your heart is thicker than usual. And when it's thicker than usual, you have abnormal muscle, a very thick muscle that may close off during exercise. Some people have a vulnerability to irregular heart rhythm, things called supraventricular tachycardia, atrial fibrillation. So these kind of things actually may cause problems during exercise. My advice really to people who are worried during exercise is to take simple steps. Problems during exercise really happen, and you can kind of predict it if persons are not well rested during before exercise. So a lot of patients will go and blast five sets of badminton or 90 minutes of futsal after a 12-hour working day, for example. Okay, so without getting much rest, they'll just go straight onto the football field or the futsal court and just play. A lot of them will not pay attention to hydration states as well. And as you know, when you're really playing intensely, you lose a lot of sweat. With a lot of sweat, you lose a lot of salt and other electrolytes. And when you lose a lot of electrolytes and salts, important salts in your body, you may be prone to developing irregular heart rhythms, which can become very fast, very dangerous, and cause a cardiac arrest. So what I always advise to people is that before attempting any strenuous exercise, make sure you're well rested, make sure you know your limits, make sure you're well hydrated. The hydration state is super, super important. And for people who are not used to very aggressive or very intense prolonged exercise, like a 100-kilometer cycle or 50-kilometer cycle, to always train in advance, to start off in moderation, 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers, 20, and so on. So I think I have had a couple of patients who had a heart attack during futsal. And when you kind of ask them further, it's probably the first futsal game in 6 months after the MCO. So you can see that these kind of things is just a recipe for disaster, really.
Yeah, of course. Okay, we'll go for one more short break before we continue on our conversation with Dr. Imran of Pantai. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Dr. Imran Hafiz, cardiologist at Pantai Hospital Kuala Lumpur. Dr. Imran, you know, this show is all about business and tech. And every now and then we do get guests from the health sector to talk to us about the health industry. I just want to ask you a little bit more about some wearables or tracking devices that we can just get, right? From Apple Watches to Fitbit and all that. How do you feel when it comes to the first of all, the accuracy of it. The second of all, of course, how can we use this to actually help ourselves to monitor our health, particularly when it comes to products like the Apple Watch and the ECG that's on it. What would be some of your ideas when it comes to these wearables?
I think this is a really interesting interesting kind of field where it kind of, there's a marriage between medicine and devices nowadays. I myself wear a smartwatch. I don't wear an Apple Watch. I wear a watch, which I use really to track my fitness throughout the day and during exercise. It helps me know what my resting heart rate is. It monitors my heart rate, whether or not it's suddenly spikes up dangerously during exercise. And these are the kind of things that kind of give me a reassurance that I need to stay in the zone. Interestingly, you mentioned the Apple Watch. Now in America, the Apple Watch is actually also used for monitoring irregular heart rhythms. There is an app which, if I'm not mistaken, is called the ECG app on the Apple Watch. And I was discussing this actually earlier with one of my patients who was wearing an Apple Watch and was having a feeling of irregular heartbeat. Now, what this app does, or what the Apple Watch does, it can detect irregularity within the heart rate or within the pulse. So sometimes we have this irregular heart rhythm called atrial fibrillation, or AF, or AFib for short. And the development of atrial fibrillation or AFib in certain patients, particularly patients above 65 years old, previous heart disease, high blood pressure or diabetes, it may actually increase their risk of developing a stroke. So what they've been using this Apple Watch for, or this app in particular, is if this watch detects an irregular heart rhythm, it more or less records the rhythm for you, which you can download. And you can actually show to your doctor this this tracing, this ECG tracing or heart rate tracing that it's kind of tracked. And based on that tracing, the doctor can then escalate you further for further investigation to see whether or not you really truly have this irregular heart rhythm. And if so, can actually recommend treatments to reduce the risk of problems from that heart rate.
Yeah, when the Minister of Health's MDA or Medical Device Authority approves this service, I guess, or app in Malaysia mid last year, it also provides that, and it's not just in the US, by the way, but it also provides like a screening, right? I mean, of course, the big headline here is that this is not taken as a proper medical examination, but this could be a screening that helps folks like you to assist your patients. Do you feel that it is rather essential? I'm not trying to sell Apple Watch here, but do you feel that these kind of devices, you know, must be gotten to the hands of those that can actually get it?
I think it's super, super important to do anything in your power to increase the diagnosis of these kind of conditions. Many a time, or I've lost count of how many times I've had a patient who's come in with a complication of these kind of irregular heart rhythms, strokes, in the middle of the night or just into clinic, who've already had kind of symptoms of palpitation several months before. And I have had patients who've come to me. I had a patient referred to me from Hospital Kuala Lumpur with this kind of irregular heart rhythm, who actually kept a folder of tracing she had printed out from her Apple Watch. And lo and behold, it was actually atrial fibrillation, which wasn't caught with any other device but her Apple Watch. So when we put on prolonged monitoring for her using a medical-grade device, we managed to catch it, put her on the right treatment, and hopefully we've managed to reduce her future risk of strokes and so on. So these are the kind of things where it helps us to screen early or actually catch more people that would have never presented in the first place. And there are some devices which don't only look at the irregularity of the heart rhythm, but there are some watches, when worn at night or during sleep, actually track your oxygen levels. There are some conditions called obstructive sleep apnea, where people who snore, they may actually lose oxygen saturation through the night. So some people may be sleeping at 95% of oxygenation, but as they snore and they intermittently or stop breathing, their oxygen levels can go as low as 80%+. And this one, when it happens repeatedly, it just really contributes to heart disease, hypertension, et cetera, et cetera. So I've also had patients who've detected this intermittent, short-lived, low oxygen saturation. So yes, the usage of these devices does help screen early for these conditions before they cause complications.
Fantastic, but there's a lot more that I want to ask you. Unfortunately, we have to draw this conversation to a close. But before we end, maybe you can share with us, you know, 1 minute tip to inspire those that are watching us to stay healthy. What would be some of the key messages that you can share with us? 30 seconds, doctor.
Okay. One thing I need to that I always tell my patients is that sometimes if we don't really worry about our own health, just imagine what a sick person like us would be to our family. If we're the only breadwinner in our family and we have a heart attack or a stroke, just remember or imagine how much impact it will have. So hope that really inspires and motivates my patients to be well, not only for themselves, but really more for their family, for the young families and so on.
I think that's the best message that we can share, actually. It's not just about you, it impacts everyone else. Thank you very much. That was Dr. Muhammad Imran Abdul Hafiz, cardiologist at Pantai Hospital Kuala Lumpur. If you've missed any part of this interview, just search for Health Matters on Notepad on astronomy.com. Till then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.